Our next presenter is Nicole Smith. She's going to be talking about access for all, providing contraception to women under the Affordable Care Act of 2010. Nicole's a third-year doctoral student in health behavior at Indiana University in the Department of Applied Health Science. She's currently the research coordinator for the Center for Sexual Health Promotion and is conducting her dissertation research project in the Title X family planning clinics across Montana.
Okay, thank you so much. My presentation is going to just talk a little bit about how this new contraception mandate might look as it's being implemented through healthcare reform, and then kind of looking at how Montana has seen some progress in implementation of this new policy. I have nothing to disclose. Despite some recent positive trends and seeing some of our unplanned pregnancy rates go down specifically among teenage girls, unplanned pregnancy, mistimed pregnancy is still an important issue among American women. And we know that most of these pregnancies are a result of non-use, inconsistent use, or incorrect use of a contraceptive method. So as they were thinking about healthcare reform and what would be included under this umbrella of women's preventive healthcare services, contraception did make it into the act. So the law states that for all private health insurance plans, all insurance plans will provide contraceptives at no cost as prescribed for all FDA-approved contraceptive methods, sterilization procedures, and patient education and counseling for women of reproductive capacity. So this is great. This is the language that we have. However, there's been no further detail provided to what this actually means. So we know that, for example, condoms are technically an FDA-approved medical device, medical contraceptive, but we've not heard any information about whether or not condoms should be included in this list or not. And part of this plan went into effect as of August 1st, so we're about 3 months into this. However, because of the nature of the law, for anybody with a grandfathered plan, this doesn't apply. So it's really only to applying for women who have enrolled in a new insurance plan since August 1st. So it's a very small number at this time. And also, because of the time sensitivities of the nature and how this law was passed, there was really no time to conduct kind of a larger economic analysis. We really have no kind of supply and demand, a price elasticity estimate of, you know, once the cost goes to zero, how much increase in demand will we see for contraception? But we do know that most, you know, that all contraceptives have been found to be cost effective. And we also know that as kind of a general rule, our most highly effective methods are currently our ones that are most expensive, at least at first for these upfront costs. So in the long run, getting an IUD is more cost effective for women. However, that upfront cost can really be a barrier for them accessing that method currently. And this also was an important issue to deal with because as of today, we still have many health insurance plans that aren't mandated or not providing their employees or their providers of this plan with contraceptive coverage. So a study found that 85% of large employers, 62% of small employers were providing some form of contraceptive coverage in their health insurance plans, and as few as 39% of HMO plans were covering contraceptives for women. So this mandate is hoping to really address that issue. So I wanted to do just kind of an initial survey looking at some data on where we're at currently with prescription contraception use in the United States and provide kind of a foundation or a baseline to see, after things really get fully implemented in 2014, what are the differences in the trends that we're seeing? Are women moving to these currently more highly these more expensive methods, but that are also our more highly effective methods? So I just wanted to provide some kind of baseline data for that. So I looked at the 2009 Medical Expenditure Panel Survey. It's the MEPS survey. It's a nationally representative survey conducted annually by a branch of CDC. It's really our nation's primary source for data on health insurance and prescription medical in the United States. We use these national estimates and weighted the data based on a MEPS formula. The sample that we used was limited to include only women between the ages of 18 to 44, and I looked at this variable called prescription name and found that it included 111 prescription contraceptive names in this file. I then classified them into the following six contraceptive categories. So there were 8 different kinds of progestin-only pills listed, 96 different forms of combined hormonal pills, 2 for the patch, 3 for the ring, and then the Mirena was included, and an emergency contraception as well. So I ran just some basic frequencies on demographic characteristics of these women, looked at insurance status, looking at those women who are using method versus not, and ran a one-way ANOVA to test the differences in this out-of-pocket prices paid on a monthly basis for how much women are paying for these contraceptive methods based on their insurance status. So our final sample represents over 55 million American women, and out of this sample, approximately 19%, or a little over 10 million, reported a prescription for contraception within the past year. And this number is definitely very limited. So the way that this variables were set up, we're missing things like Depo, Paragard is also not listed, we're also not seeing women who are using sterilization, and Implanon, Nexplanon, all those things are kind of missing, and we're also not capturing women who are using condoms because those obviously aren't a prescription method. So the data is limited in that regard. So this is the breakdown of in this data set, what women are using. About 80% were using combined hormonal pills, 8.43% reported using a progestin-only pill, 3% were using the ring, 2% were using the patch, and less than half a percent were using the Mirena. This is the breakdown of health insurance status of this sample. 66% were reporting a private insurance plan. 15.2% were on a public-only health insurance plan, and 18% of these women were uninsured. So based on some chi-square analyses of these different sociodemographic characteristics, we see significant differences in the likelihood of reporting a prescription method based on these categories, which is kind of supports what we know in general about contraception use in the United States. And this is a list of different amounts of mean out-of-pocket price paid by insurance status. So we see across the board that women on public-only insurance are paying the least amount for their methods, and then we see that women on private insurance and uninsured are paying much more for their methods in comparison to the women on public-only insurance. So there was a significant difference in the out-of-pocket price paid by women, specifically looking at the pill, with uninsured women paying the highest price. So they were reporting about $28 on average for their combined hormonal pills. And again, we're seeing women on public insurance paying the least. We're also seeing that women on private insurance, so even those women, you know, who have these private health insurance plans, are paying significantly more for their methods, looking at the ring and the patch, with the average cost for the ring being about $24 a month and the patch being $37 a month. So in 2014, when this is fully implemented, you know, these costs will no longer be something that women have to come up with every single month. So it's just kind of providing some baseline data on where things are at now. So this data set is definitely limited in that we can't really estimate what this kind of price elasticity of demand is going to look like, but it does provide kind of a baseline assessment of where we're at and what methods women are using now. And we know that cost is not the only barrier for women using contraception. So, there's many reasons why women aren't able to access or use contraception, and this is just one piece of the puzzle. And we also, weren't able to include a lot of these other methods that women are using in high rates, such as Depo and Implanon and things like that. But we definitely can see there's a lot of potential for women to start moving into our more highly effective methods once this cost issue is not there. So I wanted to kind of bring this to a smaller level and talk about what progress we're seeing in Montana. I have a research collaboration with the state Title X Family Planning Program. I'm conducting my dissertation research with them currently. So this is coming from some of what they're seeing. So going back to this law, so we have seen that the law states that all FDA-approved methods should be covered. However, we really haven't seen any other guidance provided at this time. So before August 1st, the state was given a formulary developed by Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is the provider of the Medicaid program in Montana, and the formulary was really incomplete. So their formulary includes Mirena, but not Paragard. And I think that this is really important to note, because Paragard, is such a great method for women who can't use hormones, don't want to use hormones. We also know that it's a really good method for emergency contraception, and by not having that offered is problematic. We are also not seeing Implanon or Nexplanon covered at all on this list as well. So if some sort of idea was that at least one method of every kind of form that contraception can be provided, we're not seeing any of the subdermal methods on this list. OrthoEver, the patch and the ring were both listed. And for emergency contraception, levonorgestrel and next choice were listed. And then there were 85 generic names for oral contraceptives on the list. However, if this is based on price, there are certain name brands orals that are actually cheaper than the generic brands. So that seems kind of inconsistent as well. So we're not really sure how they came up with this formulary, and this can really vary a lot from state to state. So this is just what Montana is working with right now. Again, for the overall implementation of the ACA, it applies to very few women at this time because only those women who have enrolled in a new insurance plan since August 1st would be eligible for this no-cost sharing policy. But they will, by 2014, when we see this fully implemented, then it will apply to all women with insurance. And we are seeing women on Medicaid that this new formulary is applying to them. Montana also just recently obtained and implemented a family planning Medicaid waiver, which is women 19 to 44 are eligible who meet a certain income criteria. This was implemented June 1st, and they really expected to see women kind of jumping on board with this program and thought that these 4,000 spots that they had available would be filled within about 60 days of enrollment. And after 5 months, they only have about 1,200 women enrolled in the program. So they're seeing a lot of barriers to getting this off the ground. And really one of the biggest barriers is this burden of providing documentation. And, when the states decide if they're going to implement these Medicaid expansions at a bigger level, these same barriers we could be anticipated to expect in many different ways. So they have to provide some sort of proof of citizenship and income. So a woman can bring in her passport. If she doesn't have a passport, then she needs to provide some sort of ID card, so a driver's license or another form of ID, and a copy of her birth certificate, unless she was born in Montana, and then there's a way that they're accessing the state database. That just applies to women who were born outside of Montana. All women have to provide a copy of their Social Security card and bring in a recent pay stub. And women can qualify if they are making less than 200% of the federal poverty level. There's also a time period that's proving problematic for women. Once they start the application process, they have to have all of this documentation in place within 30 days. If they don't, they have to start the whole application process all over. And there is no presumptive eligibility, so if they are wanting to enroll, they have to pay for costs up front, and then if they get deemed eligible and enrolled in the program, then they'll be reimbursed for those costs. So all of these things are proving difficult to kind of get women on board with signing up. And also there was no state funds allocated to marketing or advertising this program. So there's just really a very big lack of awareness that this program is even available. So we have seen our Planned Parenthood delegates. They did an effort where they identified all of their patients who were at 50% pay and below and sent them flyers trying to kind of outline the program, get them excited to come in and enroll. And then we had another clinic create a TV ad to just try and increase some awareness that this is going on. Another barrier is that the application at this time is just online. So that, again, creates a problem for people that don't have access to computers and don't have, good access to the Internet. And, there's really this idea for patients of a lack of a motivation to see the benefits of applying. So there's all these hoops that they have to jump through, and most of them are probably already qualifying for services on the sliding fee scale. So if they're already getting services for free or at a reduced cost, what is the benefit to enrolling? And it's really the benefit that provides so much more than just what Title X can provide, but that, that's just a little more education that's required to get them to see the benefit in that. So there are efforts going on at the state level to try and increase enrollment in these programs. The state Title X program developed some tools and trainings to facilitate the online application. And then they're really relying a lot on their clinicians to educate patients as they're coming in and try and work with them and get the application process going. And then we've seen quite a few of our family planning clinics set up some sort of computer station in the waiting room to provide a space for women to sit down and start the application and have people there that can help them. And then they're also working on an initiative to have automatic approval for women who are postpartum and under the Medicaid for pregnant women so that they could transition seamlessly into this family planning Medicaid waiver. But that's all in the works. So again, we're still at the very early stages of implementation. And you know, there's still lots to see how this plan rolls out, but there is kind of a problematic nature of not knowing, you know, what all FDA approved methods means. I mean, if all means all, then we should be seeing things like Paragard on the list, Implanon, Nexplanon, all of those things. And as far as Montana goes, they're just not seeing that now. And you know, part of the problem is there's been nobody deemed to kind of oversee this, to enforce this, and they're really thinking that it's going to come from kind of a complaint basis. So women are going to have to start contacting their insurance plans and start, you know, saying that they want these things covered. And then also just this idea that people don't tend to act proactively, so they wait until something happens. So if a woman gets an abnormal pap smear and then she needs some help to cover those services, then they're wanting to enroll in the program, whereas, you know, they're not enrolling preemptively. And then, you know, again, for both Medicaid waivers and just kind of expansion of this policy in general by 2014, I think that marketing and advertising will play a really big role in this. I speak to a lot of human sexuality classes, and when I tell students about this new contraceptive policy that's coming down, that they'll be able to access these methods for free, most women have never heard of it, and they're just completely in shock that would be something that they could access at no cost. So I think that there's just a lot of education that's left to be done. That's all I have. Thank you.